Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's Midday Magazine for Wednesday, the 17th of January, 2018. I'm Joe Vicnicki with the local news. Petersburg's Borough Assembly last night didn't have enough votes to pass a resolution seeking the repeal of the roadless rule on the Tongass National Forest. The Assembly voted on the contentious issue because the Regional Economic Development Organization Southeast Conference will be bringing it up next month. Here's more in this report. The Petersburg Borough's first draft resolution of the new year dealt with an issue that's been around since the Clinton administration. It voiced support for repeal of the 2001 roadless rule, which, with some exceptions, prohibits logging and new road building on nearly 60 million acres of undeveloped forest across the country, including parts of Alaska's Tongass and Chugach National Forests. A draft appropriations bill for the Interior Department, introduced in the fall by Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski, seeks to end the rule on the Tongass and Chugach. Mayor Mark Jensen clarified that the issue would be up for a vote at a mid-session summit of the Southeast Conference in February. Jensen explained that former mayor and Petersburg Southeast Conference representative Cindy Lagadakis asked for the current assembly's opinion on it so she could represent that at the regional meeting.
Why I will be voting for this is this encumbers, ties the hands, it makes it more expensive, I guess you could call it, for development of hydro projects if you have to drill a road, build a road, access to mines.
The rule allows clearing trees for electrical transmission lines and allows construction of new roads paid for with federal highway money. A judge has also ruled that specific mining and hydroelectric power plant projects on the Tongass could proceed even with the rule in place. The government also has leeway to approve other development and has approved tree cutting for things like mine access on the Tongass. So far, the rule has withstood court challenges. The state of Alaska is appealing a court ruling from last September that let the rule stand. And the Southeast Alaska Power Agency, which Petersburg helped form, has signed on as a friend to that appeal. Alaska's congressional delegation has introduced legislation in the past to repeal the protection, but they haven't yet been successful in passing that change. Some members of the public spoke out in favor of repealing the forest land protection. Steve Burrell cited a lost connection this winter to Prince Rupert on the state ferry system.
We need to be able to build roads in Southeast Alaska. The Bradfield Canal Road, no one's looked at that in years. To be able to get in and out of the middle of Southeast. When the ferry system goes down, which it could, we have no way in and out of here unless you go on the barge, put your rig on the barge.
But the Assembly also heard from others who wanted the forest protection to remain. Here's Joan Kautzer.
99% of us are forest dependent, but this is never reflected in Southeast Conference's positions or supported by our delegation. I hope this council will stand up for fishing, subsistence, and tourism and vote this resolution down.
And some on the Assembly were convinced to vote against the repeal resolution, including Jay Stanton Greger.
The roadless rule has a lot of flaws to it. It isn't a perfect rule by any stretch, but I think one thing it's done really well is protect fishermen and their livelihoods. It is really good for salmon.
The resolution failed on a split 3-3 vote, with Jeff Mucci and Kurt Wallhuter joining Stanton Greger in voting no. The Assembly last spring also voted against a bill by Congressman Don Young to transfer national forest land to states. And we'll have more coverage of Assembly decisions from last night's meeting coming up later this week on KFSK. More than 200 people turned out in Sitka to testify about herring and salmon fisheries in front of the Alaska Board of Fisheries yesterday, and about two-thirds of them were concerned over commercial management of the Sitka Sacro herring fishery. The herring industry wants to maintain the status quo. Fishermen and processors express support for the methods used by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game to predict how many herring they can safely harvest. The current formula would allow seiners to catch 11,000 tons of Sitka Sound herring this year. But Sitka Tribe of Alaska and its allies are telling a different story, one of dwindling spawn and diminishing subsistence harvest over the last two decades. To prove their point, a group of conservationists calling themselves the Herring Rock Protectors played audio testimony from the 1997 Board of Fish meeting.
The channel here used to be full of herring. Jamestown Bay used to be full of herring.
The whole bay used to be covered with spawn.
All the way into town,
Those were voices of Walter Moy, James Nielsen, and Jesse Johnny advocating for conservation of Sitka's herring 2 decades ago. Of the 19 herring proposals before the Board of Fish, 7 applied to the Sitka Sacro herring fishery. The rest applied to the winter bait fishery and a spawn-on kelp fishery, which is measured by a pound. And salmon fishermen from across Alaska, or southeast Alaska, that is, are also turning out in force as the board may designate king salmon as a stock of concern that could trigger increased restrictions for commercial and sport fishing for king salmon. Fish and Game's forecast for kings on 5 southeast rivers is the lowest on record. Chinook returns on those rivers are projected to be just a fraction of what state biologists say is needed for a sustainable run. There are dozens of competing proposals to tweak rules that will affect the livelihood of commercial fishermen and sport fishing charter guides in communities from Ketchikan to Haines. Petersburg fisherman Mark Roberts testified against one proposal to delay the commercial season troll opener later than July 1st in the summertime.
I'm all for conservation if it means supporting the future of our fishery. But disrupting our season unnecessarily is an unfair burden for the trollers to bear.
The Alaska Trollers Association wants the board to create more opportunities to catch coho salmon. The ATA argues coho would give some relief to trollers who may suffer from tighter restrictions on harvest of king. Only about half of those signed up to testify yesterday had time to speak, and public comment was scheduled to resume this morning as well. Declining king salmon stocks are playing a role in the Board of Fish's decision on other commercial fisheries. The board Sunday voted down a proposal for a new fishery in Southeast for market squid. The proposal sought to allow purse seining for squid, a species that can grow to 7.5 inches and ranges from Mexico to Alaska. And salmon seiner Justin Peeler of Petersburg told the board he's also fished for squid in California.
As somebody that had a background in fishing squid, I got reports from other fishermen, you know, during various times of the year of, you know, seeing squid, you know, biomass is showing up, you know, the water temperature is warming a little bit, and we're seeing changes of that in our other fisheries. And after seeing it grow and kind of more and more sightings and the density of the schools and the sightings growing, I decided, well, I should put this proposal in.
Peeler thought the fishery also could be open to other gear types. He saw squid as an opportunity for fishermen, but also as a potential threat to other species.
They're eaters. In a short period of time, they have to eat, grow, and spawn. And that's the fear I have, is that these could move in a very rapid rate, and we could see a huge change in some of our other fisheries due to us, you know, not realizing that this is somewhat of an invasive species as the oceans warm. Our local inside waters may stay cool enough that they might hold them off a little bit, but if it's warm out in the deep, they're going to come up and they're going to spawn and they're going to be in our waters as their population booms.
Fish and Game issued what are called commissioner's permits in 2014 and 2017 to Peeler and others interested in testing out whether they could catch squid in Southeast. Peeler explained he tried last fall but was unsuccessful due to weather and colder ocean waters. There was a mix of support and some opposition for the new fishery from advisory committees and other commercial fishermen. Some did not want to impact a food source for king salmon. Others wondered about catching kings as bycatch in a seine net. Sitka resident Jeff Feldpouch had concerns about a lack of information.
I'm opposed to this proposal at the moment. It seems a little bit preemptive since there hasn't been enough test fishery data come in. I share the concerns about bycatch, not just only of our declining king salmon stocks, but other non-targeted species. I would encourage the board to kick this back to the commissioner to collect that data.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game opposed the new fishery and does not do any kind of stock assessment on the amount of squid in Southeast waters. Board member Robert Ruffner of Soldotna said he was not ready to approve the fishery and asked Fish and Game staffers whether they'd still issue commissioner's permits for test fishing. Here's Commercial Fisheries Division Director Scott Kelly responding.
Given what you're going to hear in great detail and in very high volume on king salmon, Chinook salmon in this region, given the fact that the board and the department have adopted 3 stocks of management concern of that species in this region, I'd be inclined to put a pause, frankly. I mean, I really do want to support this type of fishery development. I think the species does lend itself to exploitation. Obviously, there's been squid fisheries throughout the range of the species for multi-different species. But in this case, we do definitely not support a directed fishery, so totally on board with that.
Kelly thought the department may even stop issuing commissioner's permits for purse seiners, at least until king salmon rebound. The vote was 7-0 against that squid fishery. Well, from the Board of Fish, we turn to high school basketball. Petersburg High School's varsity teams head back out on the road this week with games at Metlakatla after a rare trip to Unalaska last weekend. Petersburg girls lost Friday 26-24 to Unalaska, but pulled off the win 35-30 on Saturday. On Friday, Courtney Fredrickson was top scorer for Petersburg with 8 points. Saturday, Katie Brock led scoring for Petersburg with 13 points, and Maddie Parker scored 7. And I spoke with girls coach Dino Brock about that series.
What were your thoughts on getting to play in a new, exciting place? What was the atmosphere like up there?
Oh, it was very intense. I thought it was a pretty cool place to go play. Very thankful for the experience. The kids seemed to have a great time. You know, any time you get to go someplace new like that, it's a great experience for the kids.
How about the games themselves? What did you see different between the two nights?
Well, the first thing was that the intensity of the games was so high. The fans were packed, or the gym was packed, and fans were very passionate. It was really loud. The first night, I thought we came out, both teams, really, and it was a very defensive-minded game. Final score of the game was 26-24 on both teams. I thought had good looks at the basket, but the defensive intensity was pretty high, and so both teams struggled to score. But overall, it was a great game. We gave ourselves a chance to win in a tough environment against a good team, and it really just boiled down to a shot here or there. I think we had 3 or 4 shots in the last minute to tie it up or take the lead, and it just didn't work out for us.
And Saturday, your shots were falling. Theirs weren't, it didn't sound like.
Well, started out Saturday, we switched to a 2-3 zone and stayed in that for most of the game right up until the very end when we needed to switch just a little bit so we could rebound a little bit better. And we were very solid, held them scoreless in the first quarter. We're up 19-5 at half. Just, we played really well. I thought the basketball moved a lot better Saturday. We hit some key shots early to get us going, which is it's always a nice way to get your offense rolling when you hit a couple shots at the beginning of the game. I thought we rebounded well. I thought defensively we communicated and played with a lot of intensity, so it was very good. The second half they came out and it was a much more physical, intense game, and it took us a while to respond to that, and their defense really controlled the game for a while, and they actually ended up tying the game, and then we are actually maybe even getting a lead, and then we responded and hit a bunch of key free throws at the end of the game. We were 11-for-15 in the fourth quarter alone as their fouls from their defensive intensity got us into the bonus, and then I think we're 7-for-8 down the stretch with the game on the line. So, just, you know, it's a reason that you shoot free throws in practice.
So back on the road, are your girls ready for another round with Metlakatla?
Yeah, I think so. We are playing way better than we were, you know, for obvious reasons, than we were the first week of the season. But Metlakatla is always a tough place. They're a very good team. They pass the basketball well. They know how to play together. Very experienced. So it'll be another good test for us. I'm excited to see where we are because I think we have improved so much.
Meanwhile, the boys team lost a pair of games to the Unalaska Raiders, 64-38 on Friday, 48-27 on Saturday. And I spoke with boys coach Rick Brock about those games.
They're good. They're very good. Big, physical, fast, shoot the basketball, deep. One of the better teams around. And so great competition for us to go up against. I don't think the scores reflect how well we played, especially on Saturday. But we just could not, partly because of their defense, but we were also missing makeable shots for us. We just could not score any points.
Did they have a pretty good size advantage on you?
They did, yeah. No, they're big. And like I said, they're real athletic. So they make it difficult for you to get a shot a clean look at the basketball. Then once we did, it just, I don't know, it just wouldn't go in for us. You just have those weekends, I guess.
What can you learn from a weekend like that?
Well, you know, they play hard-nosed, intense basketball for 32 minutes. And if you don't match their intensity, they're going to run you off the court. And like I said, the scores don't really reflect how I thought we played closer. So we definitely learned, you know, with a younger group, an experienced group, learning how to play hard for 32 minutes is a challenge. And I thought we made that step this weekend.
Anyone individually that you want to highlight from this past weekend?
Well, you know, I thought some of the guys who didn't have any varsity experience coming into this year, and at the beginning of the season here kind of finding their way, I felt that Alex Warhatch and Ethan KP both, especially on intensity-wise, defensive-wise, did a very nice job and took a huge leap. They both had to guard very talented players and did well.
Doesn't get any easier for you. You're back on the road and you're heading down to Metlakatla. That's a fun place to play, huh?
Yeah, I guess from one end of the state to the other in 10 days, play four games. They're along with Unalaska, I think they're one of the top tier teams. So, you know, six of our first eight games have been against those two teams, and then you throw Wrangell in with homecoming, and that's a pretty tough competition level for us to start our season at. But I guess we'll be able to tell what we've improved on when we go down. I'm sure they have too. You know, beginning the season with us, I'm sure they've taken steps too. But it'll be exciting for me to see where we've grown, especially on the defensive end. I think we've made some big leaps there. Hopefully we can get into a groove on the offensive end, which we struggled up there when we're playing this weekend.
Boys and girls basketball teams both play in Metlakatla this weekend. KFSK has an open airwaves policy. We encourage the public to express opinions, ideas, and creative works, which will be available on our website, kfsk.org, following their scheduled radio broadcast. Views and opinions expressed are not necessarily those of KFSK. The following was submitted for broadcast by Aaron Candle.
Hi, my name's Aaron Candle. I believe in kindness, equality, and creating a better world for the next generation. And I want to tell you about the Petersburg Women's March for Love happening this Saturday, January 20th. We believe love is a transformative power, and with that love, we aim to promote a world that leaves room for the health and happiness of all. No matter one's religion, ethnicity, gender or gender identity, sexual orientation, income level, or ability, join us as we gather together to inspire, empower, and organize women's leadership and participation in our political process. We're brought together by many different things. Whether you stand up to bullies or stand for salmon, when we stand together, beautiful things can happen. All genders and all ages are welcome. So please, join us for the March of Love this Saturday, January 20th. If you want to make a poster, meet us at 8:30 a.m. at the Fleet. The march starts at 9. We'll walk through town and have a moment of thanks at Totem Park. Starting around 9:30, join us at the Fleet to talk about our goals for 2018.
KFSK encourages the public expression of opinions, ideas, and creative works. The views and opinions expressed are not necessarily those of KFSK. For information, call General Manager Tom Abbott at 772-3808. For KFSK News, I'm Joe Vignicki.